and welcome to the Your Food Matters podcast. I'm Dr. Sue Kleiner. I'm here with my great friend and colleague, Eric Bustillo.
Hello, hello. Hey, Sue. Hey, everybody. Hey, Shannon.
Hello.
Hey, everybody. You can hear we have a guest in the house. We are here today to talk not just generally about salmon, but quite specifically about salmon. We are thrilled to welcome to the Your Food Matters podcast, Captain Shannon Ford Ward, I call her. She was Ford before Ward. And we are so excited to hear her story, to understand a little more about wild versus farmed salmon, the fishing industry, how you buy it, how you get it, what does it mean when you're eating salmon. So we're excited to bring her in today. But first, I'd love to ask all of you, if you're enjoying our podcast, please like us, hit that subscribe button, and share us with your friend and colleagues. We are on all the podcast platforms, and if you'd like to see us as well as listen to us, you can log into the Move Nutrition Network YouTube channel and find us there. So welcome, everyone. I'm going to toss it to Eric, and he's going to bring us in and bring in Shannon. Hey, Eric.
Awesome. Hey. Thank you, Sue. I'm really excited to have Shannon on today because, contrary to popular belief, growing up in Miami and close to the water does not mean you know everything there is to know about fish and or fishing, and especially not salmon. So I'm eager to learn so much from Shannon. So I'm excited to learn from this. So I'm glad that you're here with us today.
So you know, what's funny when you say that, Eric, is that I actually was born and raised in Central Florida.
Look at that. I mean, she's got a history. Let me tell you, everyone, we're going to hear it today. So speaking of history, Shannon, Captain Shannon, You do have a fascinating personal history, not just starting out in Central Florida, but with Alaska and how you came to salmon fishing from having like your master's degree in pipe organ or something, right?
Yep. I didn't go as far as the master's, but yeah, I did get a BA in pipe organ.
Yeah. So let me tell you, this is a Renaissance woman. So tell us about your family connection to Alaska and Bristol Bay. Everyone, you get out your map, look up where Bristol Bay is. Shannon's going to tell us, and how you learn to fish. How you apply that to the way you fish and the way you preserve your fish today. Just, you know, we're going to sit back and hear your story because it's such a great one.
All right. Well, to see if you're getting a map out, you got one in your hand. So we'll see if we can do this in the phone. So if you take your hand and turn it this way.
Okay. So for all of you just listening, she's got a fist with a thumb pointing down.
Have your fist out and then your thumb pointed down away from you. You can see the state of Alaska is the main part of your hand. And then your thumb is the Aleutian chain. So right over here in this area is Bristol Bay. It's on the opposite side from Anchorage and Kodiak and all of that.
So in the crook in between your thumb pointing down and the rest of your fist, in that little... Yep. In that little corner, that's where Bristol Bay is.
That is Bristol Bay.
And also, just if you do a quick search on Google, you'll learn that it is the easternmost arm of the Bering Sea.
That is true. It's true. The Bristol Bay comes in from the Bering Sea. So some people talk about fishing the Bering Sea, but we are that arm of it. Yep.
Okay. So you don't have to start from the very beginning, but what I want to hear really is, you know, there's kind of the two sides where they met, and one is your history back to your grandmother's and how there was this place for you in Alaska, yeah, and your learnings there, and then that you became, am I correct, the first female fishing captain in Bristol Bay?
No. It's been, it's interesting that you would say that too. It is the minority. We are definitely the minority. It's a male-dominated industry. But in pioneering families all over the world throughout history, you can't afford to differentiate too much. So if you have a warm body, somebody does that job a lot of times. Mm-hmm. And in my family, everybody worked, everybody did stuff. And my grandmother was taken over to the beach. And we should back up a little bit. So the family came to Alaska during the gold rush. And one of my dad's great uncles was actually the first representative from the territory of Alaska to Congress. When the territory got representation, he went.
Wow.
So they go way back to long before statehood, just established territory rights and representation. So the family kind of got a front row seat to what it means to be Alaska. And included in that, we may talk about this a little later, is in the state constitution, they established how they were going to regulate all of the natural resources, including fishing. Mm-hmm. Alaska is the only state where management and sustainability is built into the constitution from the outset, which is very important.
Yeah. Yeah.
So family moved up there during the Depression. They were actually fishermen in the Aberdeen Hoquiam area of Washington. So they started out as fishermen way back before that. But then they moved to Alaska during the Depression. So I am the fourth generation to be on my site. My daughter is the fifth direct generation to be there on the site fishing. But they go back as a fishing family before that in Washington, before they went to Alaska. So they went up there. It's a long story. There are several interesting books. But the upshot is, by the time my grandmother had my dad as a baby, then they were taken over during the summer. Some of the men were out on, they had sailboats at that point. Women didn't usually go out on the sailboats. It was really hardcore. It was just an open boat. They were towed out to the fishing grounds by the canneries who owned them. And they didn't have proper gear. There was high fatality rate, 100% injury rate. It was really a rough way to make a living. And because there were so many injuries, some of the villages petitioned the state to create a new fishery called set netting, which was based off the beach. And the sole reason for creating the set net fishery was so that the women, elderly and injured, would have somewhere to fish.
Right. Everyone listen to this. This is actually super cool.
So they established the set net fishery. They set aside areas and said, these are going to be set nets. And we are allowed to lease our shore fishery. I don't own it. Like I can't, I mean, the tide comes up, so I wouldn't want to build a home anyway, but I don't own it in that sense, but I own the rights to fish it.
Uh-huh.
So if somebody comes and tries to put a net on, which that happens, then I legally have recourse to kick them off.
Mm-hmm.
So that particular, so my grandmother was taken over in the bush plane. Her brother flew her over with her sister and some of their small kids, set them on the beach with a tent and a net and left. They didn't have any vehicles. They didn't have any infrastructure. They put their tent up, and famously the first night they woke up and the tide had come in and they didn't realize how far the tide was going to come. And they had to drag their nets all the way down the beach to where they could find a site that wasn't being used and fish, drag it back. I mean, it was just, so every time I'm cold and wet and tired, it really helps to have this family history and understand it, because we have it so good. We have it just, you know, talking about standing on the shoulders of giants, these people who went before us and did these things for us is amazing. And I'm really thankful in this day and age of convenience to raise my daughter doing those things. So my grandmother was the first one to actually own that site. They created a limited entry permit system, which also has to do with sustainability. When my dad was in high school, the state decided that they were going to, as people were getting better and better at killing fish, they wanted to have some management because the sailboats could only do so much. But when people started getting power boats, then they decided, okay, we need to have some control over how many people are fishing, how many fish are taken.
Right.
So they created the limited entry. They gave permits to everyone who could prove that they had been fishing. Mm. That's a finite number of permits. Now those can be bought and sold. Mm-hmm. So my grandmother's permit, I bought from her. Mm-hmm. So I have that. It's only ever been owned by my grandmother and me. And then it will be owned by my daughter. So that's three women in a row, which is kind of cool. I was there as a child. I was sent up at 9 and put on the payroll. So I've been continuously fishing since that time. Up until, let's see, what have we been doing this? About 15 years. Yep.
So again, let's talk. I just want to go back a bit to the set nets.
Yes.
And what that is. And how are the fish any different? What you catch? What are the differences between sort of what we think of as the, you know, even out of Bristol Bay, salmon fishing for wild salmon? What's the difference?
There are several main methods of catching salmon, particularly in Alaska. There is some methods where they scoop them up in a net when you seine the fish. Mm-hmm. There's long lining. There's methods, you know, where they you're bringing in one fish at a time on a hook. This works particularly well in Southeast Alaska. You get some absolutely pristine fish because they're taken one at a time. Mm-hmm. They have smaller runs, more sheltered area, smaller fleet. It's easier to do one at a time there. Mm-hmm. In Bristol Bay, when they're coming in by the millions, we don't have time for hooks. But we have what's called gill nets. And these are, if you're listening, you can picture, they're about 6 feet deep of net. So on the top, you have hanging corks that float. And then you have 6 feet hanging down of mesh of net. And then at the bottom, you have a lead line that's heavy and it sinks. So in our area with gill netting, we have drift netting, we have set netting. The drift nets are the boats that have this net and go and deploy the net in the water and catch the fish and then reel the net back in and take the fish out. And then they will drive that boat to the market, you know, to a market. We say market, but it's a cannery. Mm-hmm. So it's their boats that retrieve the fish. Mm-hmm. And then we are set net, which means that the fish come to us. Mm-hmm. And often, I know I have a biased opinion and there are many high quality fish, but I feel very strongly about the set net because we're not moving the net around. The fish come right into our net and they get caught generally around the gills. Mm-hmm. And the way that I run my operation is we have the fish in the water. Now, this is cold water.
Yeah, it's really salt cold water. Right.
Those are two really important details when you're looking at the source of the fish. Because these salmon, their life cycle is transitioning between fresh water, salt water, back to fresh. Mm-hmm. And they go out into the North Pacific for 2 to 3 years, generally, it varies. They eat all the krill, which give them the nutritional value and the color that you're looking for. They store up energy for one reason, and that is to make the long journey back to spawn in the exact area they were hatched. Mm-hmm. They start burning all of that good stuff the minute they hit fresh water and they start dying. So if you catch a fish that's been 2 days up a fresh river, it has already burned up what you want to eat.
Right.
And it has started to deteriorate.
Yeah.
So catching the ideal place is right there when it's going up the river. You're not, it's going to die, so you're not stopping a life when mm-hmm. it could continue, right?
Yeah.
You're at the very point where it's premium quality. We pull our fish in small bites of the net. We have a truck and a pulley system generally. Mm-hmm. I have a boat, but with my daughter, it's safer on the shore, and we're processing on shore anyway. Mm-hmm. So we bring in a little bit. We have ice. Each fish is removed, layered in the ice, little bit more net, layered in the ice. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, we are doing one by one, the highest quality we can right out the water. And we are dropping the temperature of that fish when it comes out so that it doesn't, when it's coming out of the cold water, it doesn't warm up.
Right.
Then you process and freeze it again. You're destroying the cell structure mm-hmm. when you do that. Mm-hmm. So we're bringing it right out of the water, dropping the temperature. There's all kinds of biological responses with the fish that we are prolonging so that we keep the quality up. And we clean them, freeze them. The fresh products are done right there. And then we ship out headed and gutted products to the lower 48 down here to Washington, where they get custom canned or custom smoked for us. And then I sell it directly. So that's me.
And you are toifbyseafoods.net. So you remember that net setting or set netting or what? It's actually spelled out toifbyseafoods.net. Yeah. You'll hear Shannon talk about Tibbs. What she means is toifbyseafood. Yes. And there's a funny story behind that, but I don't want to take too much time with that. If you're looking for her and her fabulous salmon, you can go online and get it at toifbyseafoods.net. So I know I am incredibly fortunate that because I know you, because you and I met, I don't even know how long ago, more than a decade ago, at your very first farmer's market in a blustery rain. 15 years. Wow. Yes. So everyone, you can't believe it. Shannon brings me my frozen fish to my doorstep in a cooler. I mean, it's unbelievable, but it is this very dark, rich color, different than I ever see in a store anywhere. And I know that that's changes annually a little bit based on the environmental conditions and the pressure and stresses on the fish themselves. But give us a synopsis of the difference between not really just Bristol Bay, which is such a fabulous area, but wild salmon in general versus farmed salmon. And it's not to say that you should never consume one or the other, but there are concerns and people have, they worry about sustainability on the farmed side, on the wild side. And I think your story telling us about the laws of sustainability built in Alaska is why we really like wild Alaskan salmon. And then on the other side are, you know, or are there any health concerns with wild salmon? And as well as health concerns on the farmed side. And, you know, again, it's promoted as a solution to maintaining the environment. However, I know when you drill down even barely, it's not good for the environment in most instances, except for maybe the most careful of farmers. Just like how small are those small family farms on land that take such care of the environment. So anyway, there you go.
There are actually a lot of parallels. The first one that springs to mind is the life cycle. We were talking earlier about the salmon transitioning from fresh to cold, fresh to salt water, and the fact that it's very cold. The other thing is activity. Those animals, those organisms are moving a lot and they have a rough life in many ways. A farmed animal, I would compare it to like a chicken that is out in the pasture and it's running around and it's finding bugs and things like that, as a chicken was intended to do, versus taking a chicken and putting it in a cage where it can't move and right. you feed it pellets. That is going to be a completely different entity than the original as intended. Mm-hmm. So if you take a salmon whose whole entire shtick is that it lives out and it comes back, everybody knows the return of the salmon, right? They come back to where they came from. You're diverting what makes it a salmon. You are penning it so it's not fighting those forces and developing its body the way it's supposed to be. It's not eating the wild food that gives it the color and the nutrition that it should have. You're putting a lot of animals in one small space. That doesn't work well for animals, people, nothing. You can't do that. You have, with farm salmon, you have to feed them antibiotics and things because you have disease, because you're in an enclosed area. Most of the farms up until this point have been in or adjoining the ocean. Any of those toxins, antibiotics, diseased individuals, pests or huge sea lice are a big problem. Those all transfer to the wild populations. You've had lots of instances, most of the world now we're kind of the last wild run because everybody else's fish have escaped and then mixed with the wild population. Mm. So you've now completely ruined what was existing. It's not a matter of saying, well, we can have them separate and you can choose what to eat. It's impacting both, which is a huge problem. The nutritional content of the wild salmon, the fat that is in them is good for you. If you look at, if you can compare side by side, because they're often in the store side by side, the wild and the farm salmon, you can see the lines of fat in the lighter colored farmed salmon. That is not the kind you want to eat. So to say that the omegas are, oh, they're both fine and this is more environmentally sustainable, is not true. We are catching so many salmon every summer that they can't handle them. We have salmon for everybody. There's no question of, well, we better not eat them. And then I've also heard things about, well, we need to save them for the orca, so it's more environmentally sustainable to eat the farmed. That is not true. Farmed salmon destroys the environment, which would by turn affect not just the orca, but everything else that on the water.
So what we heard, and I'm going to give it over to Eric to ask too, but just relative to the orcas and to where we live here in the in Seattle, the sort of the story is, don't eat king salmon because for our local orca population down here, not in Alaska, that's their food, and so we shouldn't be eating king salmon from the local water. And I think there is a limit on how many king salmon you can catch if you're just a recreational fisher person. Is that true?
I believe that's true, and that's not my fishery.
Right, that's not your fishery.
Exact limits of those. I know that any biological system is a complex organism with a lot of factors that we don't understand. The ocean, even more so. There is so much we still don't even know with all of our technology. And that is a hotly debated, the king salmon in particular is hotly debated every year at every event that I go to, boards, committees, everything. Because there have been less king salmon lately in Alaska as well. So there is something that is affecting them outside of our purview, because we can look at all of our impact on the fish and we're not getting an answer from that. So it lies somewhere else. There are some very good theories about overfishing by other countries illegally, where they have large nets that just suck up everything. Ours are very specific. We have almost no bycatch, and the ones that we are catching are things like flounders that are absolutely plentiful. Mm-hmm. So we're not disrupting another thing. You have these large nets out there that are dragging or pulling up everything, and that a lot of us feel like that's a contributing factor. There are also the planet shifts. There are different upticks in things. There are animals that I see all the time now that I did not see when I was a kid, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. Things shift. And so to say that it's a silver bullet, well, we're going to stop eating this fish and that's going to solve all the problems, I think is kind of a lazy answer to a larger problem. Mm-hmm. And what I would say almost 100% of the time is if you look at the source of your food instead of making a blanket statement, well, eggs are bad. Well, no, they're not. Let's look at where did they come from? How were they generated? Are there going to be more? That kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for your fish, every seafood in Alaska is certified sustainable. So if it came from Alaska, an evaluation was made by the state biologist and a third party certification that it was okay to harvest that animal. So if it comes from Alaska, you know it was evaluated to be okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, which is really important.
It is important. And it's ongoing. This is not just, okay, we'll go for it. We'll check it with you in 20 years. Yeah. This is all the time that they're looking at the factors mm-hmm. and deciding that this is an okay thing to do, mm-hmm. cool. which I feel very good about.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to ask, let's say I'm a consumer, I'm going to the grocery store. In your opinion, what are things that I'm looking for as far as salmon is concerned? I mean, obviously, it sounds like I want it to be from Alaska. Yes. And then are there other things that I'm looking for, a particular color, a thickness, anything along those lines?
I'm glad you asked. I'm big on everybody finding it wherever they are. There's a couple of things. First of all, if you can look on there, you're going to have an easy answer if it has Alaska branding on it. If it's got, there's the Alaska, I would also refer people to alaskaseafood.org. Alaskaseafood.org is going to have lots of information on nutrition, sustainability, the story of the people. There's a little blurb on me somewhere on there too. And I actually, it's a committee that I work with them to help communicate what we do. But so if you're going to the store, you look for branding on there. If you see the ASME logo on there, the Alaska Seafood Sustainable logo, there's a Bristol Bay logo, something like that that you see on there that says that. And then you have to read it carefully. If it says wild caught, that's better than straight farmed. But sometimes there are farmed fish that are then released in the wild and caught in the wild. And then they say it's wild caught.
Oh, God.
Sneaky.
So you got to read that. And then the other thing is I'm in favor of customers being able to decide what they want, but I get really mad about the labeling. You got to be honest on your mm-hmm. label. Mm-hmm. So when when you say product of USA and you take your fish and you ship them over and have them processed in China, and then you bring them back and you sell it as product of USA, I get a little salty about that. It's not right.
Same here. Pun intended.
So you want to look at your package and see where it was done. So you can get as much information as you can off the label, but your eyes can also help you. Hopefully it's sealed. I would advise almost any case, don't buy it when it's just sitting out. If it's thawed and sitting out, and here's another term for you, fresh. Fresh only means it's not currently frozen. So it could have been frozen thawed, who knows how long it sat on the dock, then it went over here, and now it's sitting out on the ice next to who knows what, and bad news for you, parasites can travel on the ice. So your fish might have started out as a pristine product, but when it's just laid out on the ice next to everything else, we're all now possibly contaminated. So I would advise people to, and ask your grocer, ask your meat counter, do you have blast frozen packaged fillets? So when you buy that fish and it has been frozen immediately and vac packed, it is the closest thing you can get to right out the water. It's going to thaw out and be firm, good to eat, nice. It's not going to have the gaping, all these different things that happen when you keep. Remember we talked about the cell structure that starts deteriorating? Mm-hmm. You want to preserve that. And so you can look at a fish if it's starting to gape or it has freezer burn or whatever, probably not as good. You want to look for something and ask for something. Consumer demand helps generate them offering these products. So a nice bright color, uniformity, so it doesn't have, you know, gaps and everything in the flesh. And then if it is, I mean, you can smell, it should smell like the ocean. It should not smell fishy. Mm-hmm. It should mm-hmm. smell fresh like the ocean.
Yeah, so your fish, awesome. and everyone should know, I mean, this idea of not frozen is ridiculous. You don't want your fish to come not frozen from Alaska. So I know you blast freeze it. Like you said, it never warms up from the ocean on. And I just never eat fish that is ever any better than your fish. I won't eat salmon anywhere else in the world other than in my own kitchen. And so it's like, but to tell people, so frozen, so it's frozen solid and it's vacuum packed. Yeah. And the day that I want to eat it for dinner, I take it out of the freezer in the morning. I put it on a dish into the refrigerator, and by, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock, it is defrosted. So don't defrost it out on the counter, because then it goes through this warming cycle that right. Shannon's talking about. But it's fine in the refrigerator. It does defrost. If you want to take it out the night before, that's okay too. But it's so super easy, you know, that I learned that from you. Don't buy not frozen fish unless I caught it myself.
If I flew it down on the plane and went straight to your house, maybe.
Yeah.
So Alaska Seafood has some great information on their website about the frozen campaign. All of this seafood, you don't have to take the time to thaw it. You can if you want to. We were talking earlier, one of the ways I like to do it is to marinate and thaw at the same time. So I'll take the fish and put it on the pan on which I'm going to bake it with some foil underneath. Add my olive oil and seasonings. Olive oil you're always going to use on your fish because it seals in the juices and protects it from drying out. You're not going to lose the things you want to eat. Mm-hmm. And it gives some forgiveness. A lot of people are worried about cooking seafood because they haven't done it before. Mm-hmm. If you use the olive oil, it protects you from accidentally overcooking it. And because it's frozen and if it's sushi grade, then you don't have to worry about food safety to cook it to a certain temperature.
Shannon, this has been so fabulous. We have one more question. We always have a final question for our guests. But first, I do want you to explain, if people want your salmon, how can they get it?
Well, if they're outside the U.S., that's a little more problematic. You might have to buy me a plane ticket, and I'm willing to be convinced. But inside the U.S., I can ship it to you. If you are wanting things like cans, those are shelf-stable, so those are easy to send anywhere, anytime. If it is a more perishable product like the smoked or the fresh frozen, we can talk about what time of year and the best way to get it. Alaska Air Cargo, if you go to Alaska Air Cargo online, has a list of locations nationwide. If you happen to live by one of those, our answer is very easy and I can send it to you that way. Otherwise, I work individually with people. The best way is to contact me. You can do it through the website and send me a message where you are, what you're interested in. I always have a fresh sheet of what's available. It might not be current online. and then we'll figure out how to get it to you. If you happen to be in Florida, Eric, if you know people, we decided to go back, and at the end of February, we are going to be going to Florida. So just to save people the hassle, I'm going to be shipping pre-orders ahead of time and then delivering them. So anybody who is in the Florida, maybe even the South Georgia area, that would be interested in having the fish delivered fresh to them, I would be happy to put you down on the pre-order list and you can get a special delivery.
That is awesome. And that is so good to know, because that's, I mean, you're like on literally the other side of the country, like polar opposites kind of thing.
No.
Gosh, that's amazing. Truly. And if you could tell us one more time, best places to find information to just all of that, everything about you.
Yeah. AlaskaSeafood.org. AlaskaSeafood.org is Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, and they have amazing information on nutrition, sustainability, a billion recipes. You want recipes? It's all there. So
I love recipes.
I would point everybody to AlaskaSeafood.org. My website, which is hopefully going to get an upgrade later this year, is twoifbyseafoods.net. I also have a Facebook page, which is more active, a little bit of Instagram, that kind of thing. But that's me, and that's where you can find my information. And I love to connect with people.
Awesome. Thank you, Shannon. And it was twoifbyseafood.net. The number two, but spelled out. So T-W-O, if by seafoods.
T-W-O-I-F-B-Y-S-E-A-F-O-O-D-S.net. If I could go back and choose a shorter name, but my boat's called the Paul Revere. Hence the Tubify Seafoods.
That's awesome. Have you, by any chance, total tangent here, but have you ever heard of an artist named Noah Kahan?
No.
So Noah Kahan, he's relatively new, at least from a popularity standpoint. He's been making music for a while, but he has a song called Paul Revere.
I'm gonna find
total side note.
That's,
but
so
it's
fun.
It's a good song. I saw him live. I went with my lady to see him in South Carolina. It was a good show.
Man, that's so cool.
Okay, now I do have to ask the final question that we like to ask our guests on here. If you could eat a meal with anyone, dead or alive, who would it be and what would you eat?
That is, I'll try and do a short answer, because obviously you would choose family members who have passed, you know, to have one more meal with them would be an amazing thing. And I would choose that above anything else. The other guy I've thought about is the first one who thought it was a good idea to cook and eat an artichoke. That's got to be an interesting person, right? Because I'd like to sit down and eat with you. What was your thought process in that?
I can honestly say I've never heard that before.
There's so many different historical characters that would be interesting. But the one I always go back to, like as a fisherman, this is a little bit of a serious answer. I like the fact that Jesus' disciples were fishermen. He didn't go like to the most important people that were, you know, far off from the actual producers. He had fishermen and he saved them from a storm. My boat has sunk. I've been in a storm and sunk. This is very close to home. And he cooked them fish when they came back from fishing. So if a long night of fishing in the cold and the hard work, and you come back and someone has made you food, it could be the worst cheap ramen package on the planet and it would taste amazing because someone has made you food. I always have wondered, what did that fish taste like? Like Jesus made the fish on the, and you know, if you cook something outdoors over an open fire, it tastes better than anything else. So they came in and it was fresh off the tide and there was fish, and you imagine like the oils and the crisp outside and the warm inside steaming, and they came and ate it. And all of my life, I've always thought, oh, I just want to taste. Like, wouldn't that be so good?
Mm. Wow. That's pretty fascinating. And it's funny that you say that, because I heard somebody answer a question similar to what I just asked you. Or who knows, maybe it was even the same question. I'm not sure. But the reply, and it made me think, they said was actually Jesus Christ. Yeah. And I was kind of like, that would be an interesting conversation.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah. You know, like just because whether someone is religious or not.
Right.
And I think I'd be sure to ask him about the fish that he cooked up.
Give me the recipe. I want to know how you did.
So we could put it on the website.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Wow. You are truly a fascinating and interesting individual. So much cool stuff that I've learned from you. And that's that you weren't able to even share your story about a boat or losing a ship. Like, yeah. What? I mean,
well,
I don't know how long that story
is. If you want to go and see it, we'll save everybody time. So if you go to YouTube and Google Paul Revere boat sinking, NIOSH did a short film about us.
Okay.
So there's a little story that you can watch of us talking about and describing what happened. It's actually an amazing story because we inadvertently did a lot of things right. Most of the time people in Alaska die and you don't find out what happened. But the fact that we live gave so much information nationwide. They were doing studies on us because they were able to find out what happened and why we were able to beat the odds.
Wow. That is amazing. If you can you send that to Sue and I, a link?
Absolutely.
And maybe we can put it on the show notes?
Sure.
Awesome. 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 Thank you so much. Yeah, that'd be greatly appreciated. Yeah. I'm sure people will find it absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, well, we do tell people as a disclaimer that the Bristol Bay Swim Club membership is closed. We are not accepting new members. Do not recommend, 0 stars.
All the thumbs down. Don't.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, growing up, my family is Alaskan and my mom's from Northern Canada, but I was born and raised in Florida, you know, going back and forth to Alaska. Yeah. I still have an aversion to cold water. If I'm going to get in the water, it better be bathtub and I better be able to see through that stuff, right? So all of my life I've been made fun of for not wanting to be cold and in the cold water. And in one part of my brain as we were going down, I was like, oh, man.
Oh, no. Wow. That's so many stories. Goodness
gracious.
Wow. Wow, amazing. But Captain, thank you so much for spending the time with us, for being
thank
so insightful. Yeah, truly, it's been a pleasure. It's been delightful.
Yep.
And who knows? Maybe one of these days we can get a little bit of an update and have you on here again.
Love to. I love to talk awesome. About fish all day, all the time.
Awesome. I love that. Well, thank you. I hope you have a good rest of the day. And for everyone tuning in, thank you very much. And we'll definitely catch you on the next one.